Hi, I'm Daniel Lee Kiss. You're listening to Science 101, making science approachable, understandable, and relevant to everyday life. Another week, another great episode with my legendary co-host, Mr. Mark L. Christensen.
Hello, Daniel. Great to see you again. Let's talk science.
Yes. Science 101, people. And before we dive into our topic for today, please do visit our official website, www.universalpodcast.net, where you can see all those podcasts that we are creating. Total, we are 22 podcasts alive, and they are available where you listen your podcast, plus our online radio, Live 365 in the U.S., and radio.com in the UK. Please do support us because we have an intended programming over there under Universal Podcast Network for sure. And thank you, YouTube, for we're having 80,000 subscribers right now, and we are aiming for 1 million subscribers. Yes, and I hope this year we got our 100,000 subscribers, and we got our plaque on YouTube. That's my aim goal for this year. Then hoping for the best, Mr. Mark, and thank you for our 3.3 million views on YouTube as well. Thank you for supporting us. Yes. So, Mr. Mark, what will be our topic for today?
Our topic for today is a chapter from my book, Fungus Theory of Conscious Growth. And that chapter is, it's always been about transportation. So, to get started with that. Yes. So, I'll start with a small picture and end with the big picture, because I think this is an observation that needs to be cognitive with everyone. And it's very deterministic as well, just warning you. But transportation started in the biological area of life. It begins in the cellular level, and the earliest single-cell organisms had to move to survive. So even an amoeba had to form what they call pseudopodia, and that is a kind of a false legs or a way to propel itself towards food or away from danger. This is the very, very first form of transportation for an organism. And without that, you and I would never have been able to evolve into this conversation right now. Without that amoeba being able to transport itself, without it being able to survive by moving towards food and away from danger or predators. And that's where predation probably really started, is when you could propel yourself towards food, which is predation, right? That food is eating something else. It's propelling itself towards it to do it, to survive. And then that particular piece of food has to develop even a faster way of transportation to get away from that predator. And this is how predation started, which is the motivation for all of life evolving into the life forms like you and I, and the life forms that are existent in the environment that we live in today. So it's pretty significant, transportation. And I would say that it's always been about that. And the reason why is because biology continuously extends mobility. It produces fins, legs, wings, and eventually an upright human capable of carrying tools. This is what transportation does. And we walked before we held tools. That's one way of looking at it. So we transported our bodies on two legs before actually building and making tools. So it's evident that it's always been about transportation in that perspective as well. Transportation begins inside biology before it can ever become technology. So if you think about it that way, well, you have to walk before you can make tools, and you have to make tools before you can build technology. pretty important. So see, it's always been about transportation. At least that's, I think that's what biology is actually up to. And it'll present itself more as a reality later on too. Humans borrow technology from other biology. For instance, domesticated horses, oxen, camels, and other domesticated animals increase humans' range and capability of carrying and transporting objects. The wheel amplified the power of these animals, allowing civilization to extend, and biology and technology began working together eventually because of humanity. The advent of the human brought those two things together. So the wheel itself, which we all consider our main modem of transportation, really couldn't evolve without a horse or oxen, because it was those first wagons. And I think that the oldest form of transportation technology is a chariot that they actually found. I think it's what year is that? I don't have the year for sure, but it was a chariot, and that was a two-wheeled device pulled by a horse. So that being the evidence that the wheel didn't have a chance at all without first of all a horse, you know, utilizing it and making it what it is today. And to get that wheel to work, you had to make a strong axle, you had to make a bearing system that would be continuous. So that technology evolved pretty quickly because of horses. And another thing about horses is really interesting is horses, before the wheel, were humans' transportation. As soon as they were domesticated, and that was about 6,000 years ago, so mankind was able to roam freely and with much less effort geologically because of the horse. And it's strange that the horse has only been around about starting the very fundamental evolution of the horse is 55 million years ago, which is about the same time a chimpanzee learned to walk or started to come down from the tree into the grasslands and lose its tail. So if you can see the development of biology working together to develop a bipedal human and a horse right around the same time, I find it very ironic that at least on Earth, that's how the horse came around. It's the timing is, it says that everything works together for the primary goal here on Earth. Everything works together. It's kind of one biology or one fungus, all kind of working together with all the elements to be able to be successful with its primary goal. And the primary goal, as we know, is to be able to survive the end of Earth by leaving it one day, because that's on the calendar. So I just wanted to point that unique aspect there about the horse and the human arriving around the same time period. Well, I mean, why wasn't the horse around during the dinosaurs' times? Well, because it's a warm-blooded animal, that's one thing. But anyhow, the timing is really, really amazing. Technology replaces muscle, but continues the pattern. Steam engines replace horses, automobiles replace wagons, and aircraft replace many long-distance journeys. We still measure the engine output in horsepower. That's really strange. Why does my car have 92 horsepower? Why doesn't it have 92 combustional power? Why don't we say combustion power? We do, but it's the secondary reference. And it's amazing and ironic that we call it horsepower. That's what I'm pointing out here. To wheels, to airplane, and then even to rockets. So I don't think Elon equates his rockets in horsepower. They do, but he doesn't announce it that way. But they do. How much horsepower does a Raptor 3 engine produce? It's amazing that from a horse to a rocket, we're still measuring in that aspect. Now, heliobiogenesis, the transportation of life expansion strategy. See, all of these things had to evolve in the last 4.5 billion years, starting about 4 billion years ago with the single cell organism. All of this in order. I mean, you can't skip any of these and jump ahead. Each one of these, from biology to horse to manpower, has to evolve exactly like that in order to get to a rocket. You can't skip or jump ahead of any one of those. It's really amazing to see this work like a system, like almost a deliberately intended system, if I can say that. I'm not supposed to say that in science, but I like to anyway. So why is a good question to ask. Why have this biological system develop all these technologies all the way to a rocket? Because, as we know, the Earth ends sooner than we want it to, or at least the capability of it ending even sooner than that has a great possibility. So if you look at the thermal time window, we have probably 100 million years or 150 million years. That's a long time, but then again, it's not. When the dinosaurs were 250 million years ago, you know, we only have 100 million years really to leave the planet safely in that time frame. And that's if a meteorite doesn't come next week and throw us into another mass extinction, which we will have to recover from biologically and technologically. So all these threats are constantly here, which I would say to promote the development of transportation capable of biology surviving the catastrophic end of Earth, no matter which one of those it is. So I find it very ironic. I think that it is literally about transportation, starting with biology all the way to a space-bearing civilization. What are your thoughts there? Was that too much, too fast? I'm not hearing you. Let's see. Am I hearing you?
Oh, not too much, Mr. Mark. We are learning from your book itself. So tell us, what makes high-speed trains travel so fast while staying stable on the tracks? Can we do that in our next generations where we can live on Earth?
Well, I don't know a lot about the technology of the high-speed trains. I've been on one in Europe. It was a very bizarre experience. The train that goes from London to France was doing 190, 200 miles an hour. I thought, this is really a strange, you know, it was doing something weird to my head. I've never been traveling that fast. And I didn't know it was going to be a high-speed train. I just noticed that the telephone poles were really going by very quickly. I thought, well, that's really fast for a telephone pole. And when I asked somebody on the train, I go, how fast is this thing going? 190 miles an hour. It's like crazy. It was crazy. So, but I don't know a lot about it. I know that they're trying to make one here in California. And then they go up to 350 miles an hour in China. And
Japan.
In Japan, yeah. Yes. They, it's marvelous. It's just another aspect of transportation. Since time is limited here on Earth, you should take advantage of time as much as you can. And that's what the high-speed train does. It takes advantage of time. Why not go slow, right? Mm-hmm. Just take a normal train. Well, let's just speed it up because everybody has limited time here. That's my take on high-speed trains.
Yes, a limited time indeed. So what are the most promising transformation technology that could shape the future, from self-driving cars to flying taxis or transportation that we need to escape from the sun?
Good answer. Good question there. Good question. Well, you can see that formulating today with Tesla and a lot of the other electric cars. They're becoming more and more self-driving. And I'm personally grateful for that, because one day I won't be able to drive, and I would still like to get
Yes.
around, right? And it would
Yes.
be more safer in the future when I have to, have a driver. That's one good thing about it. Anybody who can't drive will be able to be mobile. That's an important factor, and being mobile is important for the acceleration of all the technologies necessary to prepare humanity to leave Earth. Now, ground speed is one thing. I think that's maxed out. If you go any faster than 350 miles an hour, you're going to become airborne. So that's as fast as you're going to go on the ground. Then there's airspeed, and they just came out with a brand new supersonic jet that doesn't break the sound barrier. Well, it does, but it's a very light sound. The reason why they don't travel the speed of sound is because of the sound barrier constantly interrupts people's lives on the ground. It's a boom constantly. So, and that's why they did away with what's the name of that airplane that they had? The supersonic,
Airbus.
the one that crashed, and then they decided to ground those airplanes. Anyhow, they that was one of the problems with that supersonic plane, was the sound barrier. So what I like about thinking about the future is that hopefully the transportation would change from aeronautics to more like anti-gravity. That would be very efficient. Kind of maybe think about it as we developing our own flying saucer to be able to get around and become space capable in the end without so much fossil fuels. If you think about it, for us as a humanity to eventually leave Earth, we will no longer have the resources of Earth to propel ourselves through space. Think about that. Okay, we get into space, we survive the end of Earth, the Earth is gone, but we run out of gas. See? So there's a conundrum there. So some type of technology may be based on radiation. We don't know what it is, but we fundamentally we're just beginning with technologies. I mean, the Industrial Revolution is only 100 years, 120 years old. I mean, that's barbaric. That's caveman level technology. So we got a lot, we're just starting. We got a long way to go. And who knows, what the collider itself can come up with elements that don't exist yet, that are plentiful in space, that can be used as fuel sources, or maybe just magnetic, electromagnetic fields that are in space. We're manipulating our crafts around that way. That's definitely more of a necessity than a reality. So, we do have some time, 100 million years, to come up with that technology. That's how I see it.
Well said, Mr. Mark. Well said indeed. And to wrap up our discussion for today, what does the design of vehicles improve fuel efficiency as we are talking about the speed and passenger safety as we go beyond our planets?
Ask that question again, if you don't mind.
Yes. So, what do you think? How does the design of vehicles improve fuel efficiency, speed, and passenger safety as we go along to living on planet Earth?
Well, you can't change velocity or mass. MC equals, what is it?
C
MC
squared.
equals, anyway, this is the Einstein formula is never going to change. So safety is the most important thing. Saving lives is the most important thing. And we're still doing that with aeronautics, trying to save lives from airplanes crashing. And really, every plane landing is a controlled crash. That's the way pilots learn to handle a landing, everything. It's a controlled crash. And if you can control it enough, your wheels help you land. That's one way of looking at it. But to zoom into the future, if you wanted to move quickly or faster, you're going to have to do something to protect the organism with inside that structure. And a lot of the UFO or the UFO experts today are trying to figure out that these UAPs are making left-hand, right-hand angle turns very quickly, you know, twice the speed of sound, five times the speed of sound maneuvers. And anything inside there is going to be, you know, with the physics that we have on Earth today, would be completely crushed and mutilated. So they're either not occupied by an organism, or that organism within that confined is allowed to exist in its own little electromagnetic universe. I want to say electromagnetic because it's the only I can think of. But there's like a force field, everything inside it, it was within its own universe, separate from its environment. And that would be the way to survive that type of maneuverability. And I hope that answers the question.
Indeed, beautifully, beautifully articulated, Mr. Mark. And can you please invite our listeners to support Fungus Theory of Conscious Growth?
Yes, Fungus Theory of Conscious Growth. The way to develop a consciousness is through growing it. You do that biologically, and the substance to do it biologically is fungal foundation. And that's how we all got here. And humanity is the spore of that fungus. If it can survive the end of Earth and leave, it will be considered the spore of this large fungus that developed here on Earth. And my book is at marklchristensen.com. And there's a lot of material on there to read about the book. And I hope you get a chance to read it.
Yes, please do support Mr. Mark, because there's a new books coming, two books. Right, Mr. Mark, what are they?
Yes, tell us. Yes, thank you. I'm working on two books. One is called What is Humanity Becoming? And another one called Heliobiogenesis, which are kind of the same. One is more for layman read, and the other one is more of a scientific read. And it should be about 6 months.
Yes, people, let's support Mr. Mark L. Christensen, because if you support him, we'll show more and more empowering books like this to rise. And people, again, please visit our official website, www.universalpodcast.net, where you can see our 22 podcasts. Please support us. Our lives, we always live with Mr. Mark every Monday or throughout the week. Either we're doing our Science 101 or Psychology 101. So tune in for that. And of course, online radio on Live 365, where you can listen to our programming over there in the US, Live 365, and in the UK, radio.com under Universal Podcast Network. So, Mr. Mark, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Daniel. See you again soon.
Modicon people, see you soon. Okay, Mr. Mark.